Welcome to Hawk Weekly.
Hello, everyone. I'm Jonathan.
I'm Crystal.
And this is Haunt Weekly, a weekly podcast for the haunted attraction and haunted entertainment industry. Whether you're an actor, owner, or just plain aficionado, we aim to be a podcast for you. And we are back once again. It is Monday. Well, it's not Monday when we're recording, but it is Monday to you, probably. But yes,
I don't know. They might listen on Tuesday.
They might listen another. Well, whatever day of the week you're listening to it on, it is that day.
Yes, exactly.
Insert date here. And we are very happy to be back, and we are talking about crowdfunding this week.
Yeah.
This is a topic that I have a lot of experience of in my day job.
Right.
I deal very heavily with these issues in my day job, so I had a lot of knowledge about it going into it, but we've never really talked about crowdfunding and haunting, and it's an issue where there's precious little information out there, it seems.
Yeah, and we actually just talked about a story last week where a haunt was trying to get some of their funding, at least through crowdfunding efforts.
So, interesting enough, it seemed to be a topic worth diving into further.
Yeah.
And so, yes, now we are planning to do the bulk of an hour on it.
Yay!
But on that note, we do have conference reminders first, telling you where you might want to think about being over the next few months. So, yeah. Crystal, I believe it is your turn to kick off.
Oh, I thought it was yours.
Oh, it's my turn then.
Actually, there's one going on this weekend that we completely forgotten. It's in Dallas, but that's not on the list, but it will be for next year.
Yes, it will be.
But.
Well, we already missed it by the time this goes live.
I know, but it just shows you that we don't know everything. So, if you have one, even if you think you've heard it here, send it to us at
Haunt Weekly on Twitter and at Facebook. We respond to Facebook messages, and that's probably the easiest way to get rid of us. Get in touch. I don't know. It might be the easiest way to get rid of us. Depends on what you send.
That's true.
Might not be so wrong. But yes, that is the easiest way to get in touch with us. But yes, lots going on this week. Conference reminders, nonetheless, I'll start since we seem to have a dispute. Coming up June 8th through 11th, it is the Midwest Haunters Convention in Columbus, Ohio, the Greater Columbus Center. They'll be touring the Scaratorium, Scare Factor, Dead Acres, and Haunted Hoochie. And they'll be hosting a late night monster beach party. And you know what? You did start in it last week. I remember now. Mm-hmm. And you can learn more at MidwestHauntersConvention.com.
All right, July 29th and 30th, Midsummer Scream in Long Beach, California, at the Long Beach Convention Center. I'd hate to see if it was somewhere else. By Creepy LA and Theme Park Adventure, you can find out more about that at midsummerscream.org. Now, these ones that are in summer are posting more information, so be sure to check them out.
Yes, definitely. Then, after that, it's Scare LA, August 5th through 6th in Los Angeles Convention Center. West Halls, there's 200-plus vendors and panels on the haunted attraction business. Check out scarela.com for more information.
And finally, we have August 25th through 27th, Halloween and Haunt Fest show. It'll be in the Dallas-Fort Worth Mesquite Convention Center and halloweenandhaunt.com to find out more there.
Yes, indeed. So, still some conferences taking place. We're out of the peak conference season.
Well, yeah, because people are building stuff.
Yeah, no. I think Transworld, realistically, is like when the haunt conferences start tapering off. It's like there's a lot of rush to build up. You have the Haunt Con, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but Midwest Haunters Convention's a pretty big one, too. That one's,
That's a good point.
But there is a lull between those.
Yeah.
Two big ones and then that one.
Yeah, June 8th is a long wait from Transworld.
Yes, it is.
Well, it's a long wait for an impatient jerk like me. How's that?
Yeah, let's just cram all the conferences at the beginning so that nobody has any time to...
For like 2 months out of the year.
Yeah, so... You know, if you've got a job that doesn't allow you to do that, sorry.
You can't go to all the haunt conferences, sorry. Yeah. But yeah. So, crowdfunding.
Yes.
This is a topic that has been very, very big on the internet lately in general.
Right.
And we've seen a lot of it, as we'll discuss in a minute, with tech companies.
Yes.
Most of the big successes or the big well-known, well-publicized cases of crowdfunding have been tech companies. And... But we're seeing it more and more with creative enterprises, too.
Right.
We're seeing, like, in the recent Mystery Science Theater 3000 reboot, and I stare at the decal on the back of my laptop, which is the MST3K decal.
Right.
We've seen those successfully use crowdfunding to get started. The Veronica Mars film did the same thing, actually.
Right, and musicians are actually using it to fund their tours around the country.
Yeah, shoot, what's her name? I already forgot it.
It was Dresden
Amanda
Dolls.
Palmer.
Yeah. Amanda Palmer.
Yeah, Amanda Palmer did
it. She got into some...
Yeah,
some
and that's a good case study for when we discussed the dangers of crowdfunding.
Yeah, yeah, because she lost some fans.
Yeah, she lost some fans over that. So that's actually a good case study to come back to.
Okay.
But anyways, so before we get into it, I guess it's kind of worth our time to talk about what the hell is crowdfunding. I know everyone's probably heard of it, but we got to have a working definition to really discuss
Other than crowds funding. Which actually, something.
Yeah. Well, basically, crowdfunding is the practice of raising capital for a project through small amounts from a large number of donors.
Right.
Kind of the opposite of what we think of a traditional investing, where you try to get a handful of investors to give lots of money. You're trying to get lots of people to give small amounts of money.
Right.
Big thing here to note is they typically do not offer equity in the company or shares.
Right.
Which is another antithesis to actual investment. Right. If you take on an investing partner, they're going to try to take on some percentage or some share of the company.
Yeah.
And, you know, whether it's a 50-50 split or a 25-75 or whatever, they're going to try to take some equity in the company. Crowdfunders do not do that. There is such a thing, but it is a... really convoluted, is my understanding.
Right.
Because you have to now deal with investment laws.
Yeah.
Because you're essentially offering an IPO of sorts.
Yeah.
So you got to deal with a lot of stuff there, and it's not something I have any real familiarity with.
Yeah.
So we're not going to talk about that. Instead of offering equity, you offer stuff of significantly less value.
Yes.
You offer tickets, shirts, stickers, thank yous, credits, plaques, so, you know, certificates, all that kind of stuff. You offer tangible, usually, but not, you know, not a stake in the company type goods.
Right, and it's also not as high in value as a stake in the company or as what you're putting on.
Yes.
So.
Yes. And the idea behind it is that this is a way to raise money for a project with a high upfront cost.
Yeah, which haunts are.
Which haunts definitely are. But have a longer term payoff on the backside.
Right.
Other examples, like we've talked about, are filming a movie.
Yeah.
Doing a TV show. But the most common use we see online is tech companies that are building a physical product of some sort,
right.
Or even a digital one these days, like video games do
it
too.
Yeah, video games do.
But they're building a product that they want to take from the concept stage or the development stage into production.
Right.
Because you've got to do that big mammoth production order, you've got to get the factories roaring to life and all that jazz.
Yeah, our last fitness trackers were part of that.
Yes. Also, our previous smartwatches were too, the Pebbles.
Yeah.
Pebble and Pebble Time both were crowdfund successes, and I have to put big air quotes around successes.
Right.
Because in the New Orleans slang, they ain't there no more.
Well, no, but if you build it with the purpose of being bought out, then they were very successful.
Yeah, they were not bought out at any kind of a profit, though, so.
Well, yeah,
It was a mercy killing. Mirthy. I know.
Yeah, I did love their product, but
Pebble.
That's another topic.
Pebble is still hands down my favorite smartwatch. We still have them. It's just I'm scared to use or invest anything into them because
the
company's gone.
Yeah, the company's gone. They're not being supported. So
now we have Garmin Vivo Actives. If anyone's actually curious,
yeah,
That was the best replacement we could find in the price range.
Stay away from Misfit.
Yeah, stay away from Misfit. that was horrible. So next comes the question of why would you do this? Why would haunters especially want to look at this as an opportunity?
Yeah.
And the main reason I see is because the traditional investment routes are drying up and closing off in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And this really came to light when we talked to Dwayne from 13th Gate, Dwayne Sandburn.
Mm-hmm.
Because he talked about how he founded the haunt, and he got started, he went to the bank, he got a bank loan, he bought a building in Alexandria, set up a haunt, and it was great.
Yeah, I thought that the... Okay.
But anyways...
I might be remembering his story wrong, too.
But
the other thing is that you already have a built-in following of people that you can reach out to
mm-hmm.
and ask for money.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing, though, is that haunts are getting more and more expensive to start.
Yeah. They're getting more expensive to go to, too.
Yeah, getting it indeed.
Just going to be honest.
and a lot of that comes from the fact that, you know, and this is a good thing, is that we keep upping the experience game. We have new technology. We have all this new audio, visual equipment. We have new, higher detailed sets. Everything's getting bigger, better, badder, more awesome. You know, we're pushing what I like to think of as the Disney envelope, where more and more haunts I go to have a Disney-like experience, you know, where you're getting something that you would traditionally expect to see at Disney World or something.
Right.
But that comes with money.
It does. And it's, And I'm not sure if customers are ready to pay a lot more for a better experience, but they are paying. So,
they're paying. But the problem is all that money is startup costs, and that's difficult to obtain.
Right.
And the other reason is that there are a lot of haunts, and we've seen this firsthand at haunts we've worked at.
Yeah.
Where investor-haunter relationships, you have a business guy, a money guy,
yeah,
and you got a haunty guy, and they team up like the weirdest version of the Wonder Twins ever, trying to launch a haunt.
Or the Odd Couple.
Or the Odd Couple, whatever. Yeah, I wanted to make a Wonder Twins show.
Okay, fine.
But they launch a haunt, and that tension between them.
Right.
Can be very dangerous and very deadly, especially if the haunt is not just immediately raking in cash hand over fist.
Yeah, and it's especially bad if the businessman you team up with doesn't understand business and growing a business and how long it takes. Because you're not going to see an immediate return.
No. You're lucky with a haunt if you start seeing a really good return in 3 to 4 years.
Yeah. And most businesses fail in 5. And that's just across the business world.
So, yeah, it can be tough to get an investor that really understands the haunt business.
Right.
In particular. And even if you do creative differences, you're bringing in someone who maybe doesn't think about haunting the same way you do. Because when you're trying to bring in someone with enough money to fund a haunt, you probably aren't going to find, you know, your perfect spiritual match. Unless you yourself are doing it.
Yeah.
If you yourself have all the money you need to launch a haunt, why are you listening to this episode?
Go do it.
Go find another episode.
Well, it's because they need to replenish what they put into it, see?
Go find another episode. There are plenty of other great episodes you can go listen to. Can I recommend any of the ones with Japes? I mean, just go listen to another episode. Seriously, this one's not for you. But the main point, though, is that this is a way, at least theoretically, to start up a haunted attraction with no upfront investment from you or anyone else.
Or very little.
Or very little, at least. Or at least much, much greatly reduced.
Yeah.
And possibly fund your entire first season of your haunt and get it off the ground.
Right.
That is at least the theoretical idea. Now, it doesn't always turn out that way, though.
No.
Because the problem is this, as great as crowdfunding can be, and this, I don't want this to be a pro or an anti-crowdfunding episode. To me, this is kind of meant to be a neutral one. It's meant to be sort of a cautionary tale at the same time as talking about the cool things it can do.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's definitely some risks to consider. And the biggest risk is, frankly, failure.
Yeah.
Here's a simple truth. Most crowdfunding campaigns fail by far.
Yeah, it's hard to get them advertised properly, and especially on some of the big ones that we'll go into later.
Yeah.
Getting onto their front page of, hey, support this, is really difficult to do.
Right, and I mean, okay, and give an example of this. The House of Shock, locally.
Right.
When they had their really rough season, they decided to close. They decided, the volunteers, actually wasn't necessarily the higher up people in the haunt, from what I understand, but some of the volunteers, some of the haunt family, decided to take a stab at crowdfunding a return.
Yeah.
They set a fairly modest goal of $25,000.
Yeah.
And it failed.
Yeah.
Now, okay, they're going to say it didn't fail.
Yeah.
Because they stopped the campaign because they found another investor, and that's fine. I get that. They stopped the campaign early. But when they stopped it, they only had a little bit of time left.
Right.
And they'd only gotten about 3,000.
Yeah.
Out of the 25,000 required. I think it was like 3,200 or something.
Yeah.
They not...
It was not close.
It was not even close. And the thing about it is this, the House of Shock, well-known, well-loved haunt, excellent haunt.
Right.
Well-loved and well-known in the community, has lots of great fans.
And their actors had told them that they would be willing to contribute.
Yeah.
To keep it open.
A huge actor family in this.
Yeah.
They had all the advantages.
Yeah.
This was a haunt that literally lined up every advantage across the board. And they even were on Kickstarter, which is we're going to talk about in a minute, is not necessarily the simplest thing in the world to do.
Right.
So they had every advantage, still didn't work for them. It just was not the right approach for them. They found an investor, they reopened, they're still alive, they're still kicking ass, they're doing their thing.
Yeah.
But this ended up not being the route for them.
Right.
So trying not to be critical of the House of Shock here, but I'm not going to make them feel like failures, basically.
No.
This just did not work.
That campaign was not the route that led to success.
But as we'll discuss later on, it may be a means of attracting traditional investors, too.
Yeah.
So that's one of the potential benefits. On the other hand, though, we talked about in the news episodes,
right,
a haunt called Doomocracy in New York.
Yeah. And it... Yeah.
Sorry. I don't know why.
It successfully crowdfunded $80,000 with an average donation of over $200 from 398 backers.
Yeah, it's the never fails thing, by the way. The minute you turn on the mic, the call starts. It's just like universal rule.
Yeah.
Don't know why. I apologize. But anyways, yeah, they successfully funded $80,000. And they did it like in a very, very amazing way because the average donation was over $200 per person. Mm-hmm. And so they really had some, and I think from that mostly came from, they had a handful of very large donations.
Right.
A couple of whales. As we'll discuss in a minute, most donations are in the lower end.
Yeah. Now, I do think that they also had an advantage because I'm not sure how much of a traditional haunt it was as much as an art installation that was meant to scare.
Yeah.
Because people are willing to pay more for art. And for an artistic experience.
Yeah.
Because you go into a gallery, you don't expect to pay to walk out with something for $15.
And that's definitely a concern to think about. If you're looking to go this route, is how do you present this not just to your potential customer base who will be seeing it,
right,
but to the Kickstarter or to the Indiegogo customer base and what they're expecting, what they're going to open up their wallets for.
Right.
And we'll talk more about that in a minute. But yeah, I think that's part of it, is that they were a haunt that was, A, more political and more artistic in nature. And I think you're right, that appealed more to the types of people who were on these sites and the types of people who were comfortable funding these campaigns.
Right.
Where, you know, with haunted attractions, people typically, you know, just walk up, roll up, buy a ticket, go through haunt.
Yeah.
They don't necessarily, I wish they would, and that's maybe one of the things we as an industry need to work on, but I wish people would think of this as more of an artistic experience, more as an expressionistic thing.
Right, and an interactive, complete immersion.
Yeah.
Because haunts have come a long way to getting to that point.
Yes.
Where they're more immersive.
It's one of the reasons haunts are so damn expensive to build and you need crowdfunding.
Yes.
We're back where we started.
Yes, we are.
It's because, you know, we're trying to build these interactive experiences, these very complicated,
right,
high tech, high immersion. So that takes a lot of money and here we are, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So yeah, you can do it, but yeah, maybe that's a warning there, is to think about how you're going to promote this and how you're going to push this.
Right.
Very large projects are going to need a lot of moolah.
Yes.
And they're going to need a very large number of investors.
Yeah.
And one of the things I would say is crowdfunding in this traditional sense, if you're looking for 100% or nearly 100% of your backing from Kickstarter or something, you're probably not going to be opening $1 million haunt.
Right. Probably not.
Yes, some Kickstarters have gone into the multi-millions. The MST3K, for example, got over 5 million. Pebble got like 12.
Yeah.
There have been campaigns that did that, but they did it through vast international appeal.
Yeah, because they weren't so localized like a haunt.
Yeah.
Because you can watch MST3K anywhere in the world, theoretically.
As long as you've got a Netflix account right now, you can.
Yeah, exactly.
It's Netflix content. So right now, yeah, the new season of MST3K, if you're a Netflix customer, it is anywhere in the world you want to be.
Yep.
So yeah, they had large international appeal. Think about it this way, and this is something to think about. The most common Kickstarter donation, note this is not the average donation. Right. I'm being very careful now. Where the most common Kickstarter donation amount is $25.
Yeah.
Now, what's going to happen and how most projects get funded is there are a handful of people who throw very large sums at this.
Right. So they skew the average.
And they skew the average, but the bulk of your money still comes from these tiny donations.
Yeah.
So the bulk of your investors, if you will, come from these tiny donations.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just possible you don't have enough people in your area, or if you do have enough people, not enough of them are these whale investors.
Right.
Like, for example, with the House of Shock, I was spent some time studying their Kickstarter. They had, I think, one person over the 1,000 mark donate more than $1,000.
Yeah.
Everything else came from sub-$50 or sub-$100 below donations.
Right.
So you need a lot of people. This is crowdfunding. It's not like six guys in a room funding.
No. No, it's not.
This is crowdfunding.
Yeah. So it's not going to work very well if you're in a rural area.
No, absolutely.
Because there's just less people.
Exactly. And that's just it. You have geographic boundaries. You might be able to open a sustainable haunt in a rural area.
Right.
But you are going to have to find a different source for funding it than crowdfunding.
Right.
Just because there aren't enough people nearby. And, you know, I tell people all the time when I think about, you know, my haunt and think about who the potential customers are, I typically try to think of it in terms of an hour drive.
Right.
Is about the furthest you can expect anyone to realistically come.
It is. Yeah.
Because, I mean, yeah, we're crazy. We'll drive 3 hours for a haunt. We've done it.
Well, the other thing is we have an advantage because we are in a tourist city.
Yes.
And so your influx of people and your reach is actually broader if you're in a tourist city. And you can get those international travelers who come to like New Orleans for Halloween.
Yeah.
Because we throw a great party.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's something to think about is you need a lot of people. And if you don't have a lot of people as your potential customers, if you're not in a tourist town.
Right.
Or if your city just isn't big enough, like New York and L.A., obviously, they can pull from their local populace right. pretty trivially if the interest is there. I would say even like Atlanta.
Yeah.
Other major cities like that. And I think New Orleans, if New Orleans were not a tourist city, I think we'd be on the very edge of what's possible.
Yeah. So you're looking for a city with a population of close to a million or more.
Yeah, in the GNO area.
In the surrounding areas, the suburbs and all of that put together.
Yeah. The urban center, if you will.
Yep.
So yeah, you're going to need a lot of people. I mean, and don't underestimate the number of people you need. Like I said, just picture that $25 donation.
Yeah.
And assume that that's going to be where the bulk of your money is coming from.
Yep.
Another reason to be cautious is that platforms take 8 to 10% of collected funds.
Yeah.
So if you collect 100 grand, expect to only receive 90 grand of that, or maybe a little bit more.
Yeah.
Now, and this is the thing that makes it kind of difficult, is the platforms determine the percentages they take differently. Both take 5% off the top for them.
Yeah.
But there's also per donation charges. And those shake out differently on different platforms, and they also shake out differently depending on how your donations come.
Right.
If you get a lot of big donations, good for you, you'll probably pay less because your per transaction fees are lower.
Right.
Get a lot of those $25 ones, though, it could go up. So it's going to fall somewhere in that 8 to 10 range, is what I understand. And it seems to be pretty consistent across all platforms. So just assume 10% is gone.
Right.
Period. And if you get more, if you get the 8%, hey, good for you, more money.
Yeah.
Happy days are here again. But yeah, I would just assume 10% is gone in fees. And that's something you don't get with traditional investing. If an investor pulls you aside and gives you a $100,000 check, you've got a $100,000 check in your hand.
Right.
You don't have that with crowdfunding.
Yes, you don't have to give him 10% back.
No, not immediately. You'll have to give it later. But you have to give more than 10% back, probably. Yes. But
maybe on the contrary, blah, blah, blah.
Blah, 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 blah. Your mileage may vary.
Yes.
And this is the one, and final reason to be cautious is the Amanda Palmer story we were talking about previously.
Right.
Whenever you crowdfund, whenever you successfully fuel your haunt with the money from your fans,
right,
those fans have an understandable feeling of ownership
right.
in your haunt.
Yeah.
Even if it's only minor.
Yeah, they feel like they helped you put on a show.
Yeah, they feel like they have a piece of this.
Right.
And they do.
Yeah.
And that's actually a very understandable feeling, because they kind of do.
Yeah.
So the result of that is, if you do something they don't like, if they're not happy with the show, if you do something that they find questionably questionable ethics. Whatever, then you could find yourself at the spear of a very, very nasty backlash, spear tip of a nasty backlash.
Right.
Which is what happened to Amanda Palmer.
Yes.
Because they found out that she raised all this crazy Kickstarter capital.
She raised over $1 million.
Yeah, for this tour.
For a national tour around the U.S. Continental U.S. So
yeah.
All the ones that are connected.
Yep.
And she would go and she would hire, well, she would get local bands.
Local musicians, yeah.
Local musicians to play with her.
Yeah, on stage.
On stage.
And then not pay them.
They
were just working for free.
Yeah.
And the crowd funders did not like that. Like, what the hell did we give you money for if not to pay all the people that are helping you put on the show?
Yeah.
That's kind of what the money is there for. And she ended up... I kind of lost a lot of respect for Amanda Palmer in this.
Yeah, I've only listened to one of her songs once in, like, since it happened. And it happened, what, 10 years ago?
Yeah, it wasn't quite that long
Maybe
ago.
Maybe six.
Yeah, it was a while ago. We'll have to look that up. But yeah, I'd actually forgotten about the story when doing the research. But it's a very good story to raise. Because the thing about it was this, is she kind of went... She didn't just, like, apologize and say, you know what, this was a screw-up.
Right.
She kind of went on this, woe is me, we're having to reshuffle where all the money goes, and you know what I mean? Adjusting the budgets to pay these people, and it's like...
You should have taken that into the account from the beginning. Yeah. I mean, you should not... As a musician, you should not expect other musicians to pay for free.
Yeah, that... I remember when this went down, when it went really hot...
Yeah.
Was right as she was visiting New Orleans.
Yes.
She was coming here.
Yes.
And we were kind of stoked. We were kind of...
You were out of town. You were at a conference.
That's right. I was at a conference, but we were stoked about it, and you were going to go.
Yeah, I was still on the fence about it, about going, but yeah, I was planning on probably.
Yeah, you're probably going to go. This came...
yep.
Plan six, Nate.
I didn't go.
No, you didn't go. No, I have no idea. Heard it was a good show?
Yeah, I have a ton of friends who are musicians locally.
Yeah.
And I wasn't going to go and support somebody who would screw them over.
Yeah, I mean, and that's
what it felt like.
When you know so many musicians locally and you know musicians personally, it's just like, you know, haunters personally, it's you sympathize, you connect with them, and you don't want to see them being taken advantage of.
Yeah.
All right. So anyways, those are your warnings.
Yeah.
Be mindful of those things. So if you're thinking about crowdfunding, where the hell do you do it? Well, for haunts right now, there are two major players.
Right.
Kickstarter and Indiegogo.
Yeah.
Now, we're not going to look at Patreon on this one.
Right.
And the reason is Patreon, I just don't think is right for haunts.
Yeah.
Patreon, a lot of YouTube channels are doing it.
Yeah.
I attempted it with my blog.
Podcasters.
Yeah. Support us on Patreon.
Yeah. We don't have that yet.
We don't have that yet. If you think that would actually work,
yeah,
clue us in at Haunt Weekly. I'm actually kind of curious.
If you would like to give us money to get more people.
Yeah, and maybe buy some new equipment to record.
Or go and visit people to actually
stuff
do the
like
recordings.
That. Yeah, I can guarantee you we'd use the money for the podcast.
Oh, yeah. But
anyways.
This
you think that
for
actually worthwhile. But no, we're not doing Patreon because Haunts... aren't really right for a monthly campaign style.
Right.
Because, you know, haunts typically are open 6 weeks out of the year, and getting monthly Patreon donations, it seems like it could work, I guess.
Now, on the other hand, if you're running something like Raven's Grin,
Raven's Grin, you're right, sorry.
I thought I had that right.
You did, I'm just tired.
I know you are. But, yeah, if you're running something like that, and it's year-round, and... Then maybe check out Patreon then. But for most haunts, that's not going to be the case.
I mean, I guess you could provide, you know, photos and videos monthly to your backers, but... I don't know.
But you should be doing that kind of stuff in social media to your fans.
And also, kind of the point of what we're talking about is crowdfunding the opening of a haunt.
Right.
This would be more crowdfunding the ongoing haunt anyway.
Right.
So, I don't know. And also, we're not going to discuss GoFundMe. GoFundMe is aimed at charities and personal campaigns.
Right.
And the thing about it is, well, okay, charity haunts might get something out of this, especially if they're lower budget charity haunts.
Right.
But typically speaking, the types of campaigns that do on GoFundMe are in the three to four figures.
Yeah.
And you're not going to see, you know, you're not going to be opening up a haunt with that, basically.
No.
So, and
I know at least in our local area, there are a couple of local crowdfunding things.
Yes.
You know, there's GoFundMe NOLA, but...
Fundadad, I thought it was.
Well, there's a Fundat too. There's a couple. But those don't have a global reach.
Yeah.
But if you're interested in looking at that, you could look up something in your
Fundat
area.
That's right. That was the thing that we learned about. Fundat is not crowdfunding. Sorry.
Yeah.
Got that one wrong.
Yeah.
But
that's
okay. The point of the matter is there you might have local alternatives in your area, but bear in mind you're handicapping yourself by only reaching the local audience and also using platforms that just are not as inherently popular as these two.
Right.
So let's start with Kickstarter because that's where everyone else starts.
Yeah.
why would we change that up?
Exactly.
It's the larger, the better known of the two.
Yeah.
It has very tough regulations as to what it will and will not accept.
Yeah.
It typically targets, like I said, tech companies and artistic projects. One tip I read researching this is to bill it as a theatrical event or make it art-related.
Yeah.
That's much more likely to have Kickstarter take it up. However, they did take up the House of Shock, so it's not impossible. They refer to themselves as an immersive art experience.
Yeah.
So, you know, there are ways you can phrase it to improve your chances.
Yeah.
The big thing to remember with Kickstarter is it only pays out if the project is fully funded. If you don't meet your goal in a set amount of time, you don't receive a dime.
Yeah.
And the fees are between 8 and 10%. Indiegogo is less well known, but it's easier to get onto.
Yeah.
And there is no full funding requirement. You will get whatever money you raise.
Right.
Regardless. Now, that raises a problem, though. Because if you get the money and then can't meet the rewards and so forth that you do, that could create an issue for you. So weigh that in. And once again, fees are about 8-10%. They say that Indiegogo is slightly cheaper, but I think that's going to depend heavily on the exact donations and how it breaks out for you.
Now, I have a quick question
for
Kickstarter. If you set your goal low, lower than what you need, but what you think is attainable, and you reach that, can you increase it?
You can do what they call stretch goals on Kickstarter.
Okay.
And those are typically informal. I know that, for example, MST3K, because that's the latest one I participated in. That's why I keep going back to
it.
I apologize. I'm a bit of an MST3K fan, okay? We're just going to have to accept this and lie and move on. But the thing about what they did was they had an initial goal where they would do like 3 episodes.
Yeah.
And then they had stretch goals for more and more episodes.
Right.
And then Netflix gave them a big wad of money and...
And then it was over.
And it was over.
Yeah.
But no, they well exceeded, I think, all but the last stretch goal. And they almost made the last one, too.
Yeah.
So yeah, you can do stretch goals, you can extend it, and you can agree to do more things. Like, for example, you could set it up so that... I'm just throwing out random numbers here, please.
Yeah.
I don't think this actually means anything. But, you know, $25,000, we will build and decorate and furnish a 2,000 square foot haunted house. You get it's $40,000, it'll be a 4,000 square foot haunt.
Yeah.
And on and on and on into, you know, infinitum.
Right.
You can totally do that.
Yeah.
Especially if you have the space already selected where you can just make it bigger.
I've also seen campaigns where if this many people donate this amount of money, then they get these prizes.
Yes.
And if this many people donate, then all those people plus the new people get all those plus these new things.
Exactly.
And,
yeah, and the goals
stretch it where,
and the goals get bigger, too.
Right,
yes.
Where the rewards get bigger
Rewards get bigger, yeah, sorry.
For the contributors.
Now, sadly, or perhaps not sadly, there are no, I could not find any specific to the haunted attraction industry.
Right.
It seems like we have our own version of absolutely every goddamn thing, from our own version of Stripe and Square to run like a taunt pain, and our own version of everything. So, we got our own job board now. Fright jobs. We got, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
We have our own company doing...
So this is probably coming if somebody isn't already stopping the podcast now to go start it.
Click, 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 click. Yes. You can practically hear it now.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
It'll probably be in the future.
Probably in the not-too-distant future.
Exactly.
yes. MST3K jokes. We do have them, folks.
Yes.
But, so... That there is not one yet, but it may be something that's coming. And I'd be interested to see if that could work. I mean,
right.
I don't know. And because one of the problems is, if you're not on the major platforms, you're limiting yourself.
Right.
And like I said, if you're not on Kickstarter, you're limiting yourself. And if you're not on Kickstarter, you're not on the front page and the featured campaigns, you're limited.
Right.
And, you know,
and that's really hard to get to those places.
Now, a lot of places, a lot of successful crowdfunding campaigns have used both.
Yeah.
MST3K used both. Right. For example, they funded on both Kickstarter and Indiegogo, and I think they took solicited donations
directly
from PayPal, donations. So they used everything. But yeah, so it might be worth considering being on both. There's no law that I'm aware of that stops you from being on both.
Right.
So yeah. So tips and suggestions. Okay. I'll come clean and say, even though I've worked with people doing Kickstarter campaigns, my attempt at crowdfunding epically failed. It was a Patreon campaign.
Yeah.
But, so I may not be the best person to be giving advice here, but I will, how about I will regurgitate good advice others gave me?
Yeah.
And that's the best thing I can do. First, have an absolutely banging amazing video and promotional campaign for the campaign, promotional content for the campaign.
Right.
Market this as heavily, as much as you can. Market it as if it is the haunt itself. Get it out there. Really bang on this. And make sure that everything is professionally done. Don't go out there with, you know, a quick shot video and all. Because you see campaigns, and especially on Indiegogo.
Right.
Where... it's very, very unprofessional. It doesn't look like any thought or time was put into it. You know?
Yeah. I would actually... some of these will let you do multiple videos. And I would record one that's like your haunt commercial.
Yeah.
That's that quality. It's about, this is what we can do. But I would also record one with you saying... what you want to do.
Yeah.
Give some information about yourself. Show your passion.
Yeah, be a human being. That is something that is also lost in a lot of these. You'll see these really slick, stylish videos. A lot of tech companies
they do.
And it's just a talking head there. This product, the Jumpstart Life Jacket or whatever the hell. I made that one up. Whatever the hell. Jumpstart your jet ski with a life jacket. That sounds like a goddamn kid.
That's not what I was thinking. I was thinking a life jacket with jumper cables that if you had a heart attack, you'd just jumpstart yourself.
The defibrillator. Heart attacks on water kill like 6 people a year or something. I don't know. I could totally see that campaign too. Yeah. We're going to market this.
No.
But anyways.
This is a terrible idea.
Whatever it is, they'll do the whole pitch and all that, but it just comes across as I guess you want to say corporate.
Yeah.
And, be a human goddamn being. You know what I mean? Be a person. Talk about your passion. Be a person or be a people. If there's multiple of you. Be a people if you must.
Right.
But be human. I mean, that's something that really does get lost.
Yeah.
In a lot of these. If you're a person, if you're personable, people connect with you, then they're more likely to give you money.
Yeah.
Focus heavily on your rewards.
Yeah.
The first step is have good rewards people actually want. I advise you to look at other successful campaigns on the service you're on.
Right.
And see the types of things they're offering at different levels.
Yeah.
Get a feel for it. And this is something where the winds change. What's trendy, what's hip, what people are expecting. will shift month to month sometimes.
Right.
So stay on top of that. Look at current, ongoing, but successful campaigns. See what they're offering.
Yeah. Like if you, something that I would like, if I were to donate money to a haunt, is if they had a great mask maker.
Yeah.
Or a makeup tutorial. Just an, you know, some time with your makeup artist.
Yeah.
Or, you know, it could be anything.
Yeah, focus on trying to find what people want. Now, the obvious thing to give away is tickets to the new season, to your
Open.
That's the obvious thing.
Yeah.
And that's a fine, great idea.
Yes.
There's one caveat.
Yes.
Make sure it's cheaper to buy the damn tickets from your kit, from your campaign, right, than it is at the gate.
Yeah.
This was something the House of Shock got wrong.
Yeah.
This was something they got very wrong. They had a reward level that was $100 for a VIP ticket and two drinks. Now, I know the drinks at the House of Shock are damned expensive.
Yeah.
Do not advise going to the House of Shock as a bar.
No.
But it is not $100 there.
No.
And so the first thought I had when I looked at that tier was, why would I donate to this,
right,
when the exact same rewards are going to cost me far less if I just go and buy it?
Yeah.
And I remember thinking that. I remember trying to find a tier, because I wanted to donate.
Right.
And we ended up not doing that. We watched it, and if it looked like it was going to be closed or something, we were going to jump in. But
right.
We try not to be, you know what I mean, as haunt reviewers, you don't want to necessarily expose yourself too much.
Yeah.
But we were in an awkward boat, basically, is what it came down to. But we were watching it, and I remember trying to find, well, what tier am I going to jump into if I jump in? And I had trouble finding one that felt like I was getting a deal.
Yeah.
And a ticket as an intangible item is something that you can offer cheaper as part of your Kickstarter, your Indiegogo,
right,
than you could at the gate.
Yeah.
And that's just good logic there.
Yeah.
You're pre-selling these tickets, and a lot of these tickets are going to go unclaimed.
Yeah.
People are going to buy them and get the rewards and then not come.
Yeah.
So you can use that to your advantage when offering them more cheaply.
Yeah.
But it doesn't just have to be tickets. You can do donor-only nights.
Right.
You can offer parties just for donors above a certain level, VIP experiences.
Yeah.
Offer, you know, like some insanely high donor, offer to have a limo come pick him up, busher him right to the front of the line, and put him through the haunt.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You and like three buddies will get this experience. You can offer personalized videos. If you have a main character, they can do autographed photos.
Yeah.
T-shirt, stickers, credits, more for high-end donors. I really like this.
Lights on tours.
Yeah, lights on tours. For high-end donors, I loved this one. This was one the House of Shock did very, very well.
Yeah.
They offer to put your name on a tombstone or a mausoleum.
Right.
In the haunt. I thought that was really, really slick. I really liked that idea. That was a good level. Or you can get a prop done in their likeness.
Right.
You could be a permanent victim in this haunt type thing.
Yeah, that sounds awesome.
It
and
does.
You could also, you know, do like the little cheap tombstones for them to take with them.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't have to be something permanent, but I think that it's awesome that they did that.
Yeah, that was the idea I really, really loved from the Kickstarter.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, that is so flipping cool.
Now, if you haven't gone back and listened to it, in episode 35, we talked about guerrilla marketing ideas and some interesting gifts or things for people to buy that ties directly into this.
Yeah, very good point. That's a good episode to go back and get more information on this. So, yeah, but think about the rewards. Try to think of rewards, and this is going to be a tough one, I admit. Try to think of rewards that people not in your geographic region, people that might never come to your haunt,
right,
might want.
Yeah.
And that can go back to the t-shirts, the bracelets, and things like that.
Yeah. A signed copy of your blueprint.
Yeah. Whatever. You know, stuff that people who just want to support you, even if they might never come by,
right,
can enjoy. So be thinking about that, because even though most of your donors are going to be in that 1 hour, you know, range, in that 1 hour drive range, you might have some people that are outside of it that still want to throw money at you, and you want to make sure you have a way to catch it.
Yes.
So try to reach as broad of an audience as possible. And that also does mean don't just think about haunter people who love haunted houses.
Right.
Think about people that are just trying to support a cool community project, or people that, you know, want to see a new business in this area.
A cast signed photo.
Yeah, exactly. There's things you can do. Thank you cards even.
Yeah.
Yeah, try to reach as broad of an audience as possible. Don't limit yourself. Because that's the thing. Remember, crowdfunding requires a crowd.
Yep.
The more people you push out of that potential pool, dwindles the size of your crowd.
Right.
Keep the crowd as big as you can. Another thing to do with your campaign is provide very regular updates and quickly answer any questions. Both Kickstarter and Indiegogo have ways to provide updates and FAQs and contacts. Use these things. Use them religiously. It helps. This is something. Another piece of advice. It helps if you have multiple people working on this campaign.
Right.
So that way, if you're asleep and someone posts a question, you know, someone else can come in and answer it.
Right.
You want to have multiple people there to catch these things and respond very quickly. Because one of the things to remember is you're asking people to give you money.
Yeah.
And if someone's asking questions, they're thinking about giving you money. Answer the question before they stop thinking about it.
Yes. That sounds like a good, solid piece of advice.
Yeah. Basically, do that. Also, there's an old expression, never beg with an empty cup.
Yeah.
Solicit family and friends to make initial donations.
Yeah.
The first $100 is often the hardest.
Right.
Get those initial donations in as quickly as you can, and that will help you start the snowball rolling. You just got to get something in there so that people know that this is not a total, you know, BS campaign.
Yeah.
Right?
It makes you look like people trust you enough to give you money.
Exactly. And that's what you want. Okay. And as we're wrapping it up, kind of ending it on a downer, I just realized.
Yeah.
But if the campaign fails, be prepared for the prospect, maybe even the probability of this campaign failing.
Yeah.
If it fails, one, the House of Shock scenario is totally possible. It may be an excellent vehicle for finding a traditional investor.
Yes.
That's great. If the campaign, especially if the campaign, because the thing about the House of Shock campaign was it got widespread media attention.
It did.
It was on all the local TV stations and newspapers were covering it. It was really kind of blew me away it didn't get more money, honestly.
Right.
I was very surprised.
Yeah.
It literally did all the right things other than maybe me questioning the reward tiers a little bit. It did all the right things. It got all the media attention, had all the promotion, it had a slick campaign. It did all the right stuff. But the interest was there. It was high. It was good enough to get another investor in.
And when they came back, a lot of people knew that they had a rough season and wanted to support them.
Yep. So there you go. And also bear in mind the campaign may have had marketing issues.
Yeah.
Crowdfunding marketing is not the same as haunt marketing, basically.
Right.
Understand that, you know, that campaign, you just might not have hit the right chord with the marketing. It might not be you. It could just be the way you promoted that. Maybe the thing you should be doing is sort of dropping back 12 and punting and thinking of another approach for pushing this out there and marketing, connecting with people.
Yeah.
It also might not be the right approach, though.
Mm-hmm.
If you are in a rural area, crowdfunding is, you don't have a big enough crowd.
Yeah.
It's that simple.
You gotta have people.
You gotta have people, man. And if your haunt is not something that necessarily connects directly with people, like the Democracy one obviously struck a good connection.
Right.
If it doesn't have that kind of personal connection, it may not work well. Or, the bigger problem, it may not connect well with the same audience that does crowdfunding.
Yeah.
And that's just it. I'm sitting here trying, like a Venn diagram in my head, imagining the overlap between haunt fans and crowdfunding supporters, and I don't necessarily see a lot of overlap out of the gate.
Yeah. Now, I do think that there could be more interest from people who are costume designers who wanted to start their own line and sell costumes and mask makers and things like that. I can see crowdfunding working for that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because that's a physical thing and you could get a shop set up.
Yeah. So it might not just be like opening a haunt. It could be opening a haunt-related business.
Yeah, it could be, you know, help me buy a booth at Transworld.
Yeah.
you know?
Exactly. In fact, I think Haunters Against Hate used crowdfunding to do exactly that.
Yeah.
They used, I think, GoFundMe, though, because it was once again a smaller campaign, and it was a charity campaign.
Exactly.
It made sense to go through GoFundMe.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Anyways. And the heartbreaking one is that there just might not be enough interest in the haunt.
Yeah.
It might be an area that's oversaturated with haunts. You might need to go to a different place. You might need a different theme.
Right.
You might need a different tact. I mean,
yeah.
So just think about those things right now and try to adjust. If you're dedicated to crowdfunding, you can always try again.
Yeah.
You can always make another run at it. But those are the potential issues you probably face and might need to address. So, anyways, the bottom line on all this, and we're kind of wrapping it up now, I think.
Right.
Is that this is definitely a new avenue of funding for haunts to consider.
Yeah. I don't think anybody's cracked how to do it successfully yet.
Not for opening a major new haunt or not, yeah. You know what I mean?
But there's no reason not to try.
No reason not to try, especially if you don't look at it as your whole budget.
Yeah.
If you're looking at it as a way to mitigate your risk or as something that lets you bring in fewer outside investors. Because that's just it. It can be just a piece of the funding puzzle.
Yeah.
But bear in mind, if it is a piece of the funding puzzle, the people who are contributing that money are going to feel like they're the whole funding puzzle.
Yeah.
So just keep that in mind. Honestly, I think this is going to be best for smaller haunts. If you're looking to launch a haunt on like a $25,000 to $100,000 budget,
yeah,
this might be able to do it. This might be able to fund your entire haunt.
Right.
You might be able to get half of it that way, but I don't think a haunted attraction, because of its geographic limitations, is going to be one of Kickstarter's top funded projects. It's not going to hit the multi-million dollar mark.
Yeah.
I just don't see that happening, unfortunately. But yes, it does come with risk, but also some potentially great rewards. And as haunts struggle more and more with funding, so much so that people like Leonard Pickle completely refuse to discuss haunt funding at conferences.
Yeah.
Even when you take his paid class. you know, and I don't blame him. I'm not blaming him.
No.
It's just an observation.
Yeah.
Haunt funding is difficult. This is another tool, and that's mainly what it is. It's another tool to solve this problem and get the haunt off the ground.
Right.
But all in all, I think it's an interesting idea, and I think it's something more haunts should explore, especially those with large population centers.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Because you've already got the people around you.
You got the people around you, especially if you've already got a reputation or any kind of history that you're building on. If you've been running a large-scale home haunt for a large number of years.
Right.
And people know your name.
Yeah.
This is your chance.
Yeah.
This is a possibility to consider. But anything else on crowdfunding and haunting to consider right now?
No.
I think we wasted nearly the entire hour of these two people's time.
Yes, I think so.
So
hopefully there was some useful information.
Hopefully learned something. Hopefully something was useful in that, and at least a few good ideas came from it.
Right.
If I get a few, there
were a few bad ones.
If I get a few good ideas per hour, I consider it a successful hour myself. I don't know about you.
Yeah,
but anyways, thank you for spending the time with us. We are on Twitter and Facebook at Haunt Weekly. Give us likes, subscribes, thumbs up, tell your friends, share it.
Yeah.
All that other social media stuff I'm legally obligated to say every podcast.
Right.
But until next time, I'm Jonathan.
I'm Crystal.
And this was Haunt Weekly, episode number 77, talking about crowdfunding and haunting. We will see you guys next week.